Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Mommy! Shrieked 4-year-old Maya, running into the kitchen and clutching her mother's arm. What's the matter, honey? Her mom asked, scooping her up onto her lap. They're coming! They're coming! Wailed Maya, burying her head in her mom's shoulder. Oh, they're coming! Who's coming? Her mom lifted Maya's chin so she could see her tear-stained face. What is upsetting you so? The monsters! The monsters are coming! Maya cried, clutching her mom's shirt for dear life. Where are they coming from? Her mother asked. Can you show me? There! Maya pointed toward the family room, and then her mom heard the jumble of sounds from the television in the other room. Were the monsters on TV? A light bulb went on in Maya's mom's head. Yes! Maya wailed. On TV! They're coming! From a parent's perspective, what should we know about young children and the media? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has done research into some of the issues of media and young children. Dr. Dorothy G. Singer, a developmental psychologist, is senior research scientist, psychology department at Yale University, and co-director with Jerome L. Singer of the Family Television Research and Consultation Center. Her most recent book is Imagination and Play in the Electronic Age. She received the Distinguished Scientific Contribution to the Media Award from Division 46 of the American Psychological Association in 2004. Currently, Dr. Singer is involved in a parent training project to teach parents to play with their preschoolers as a means of enhancing cognitive and social skills. In addition, she consults with parent groups, television industry executives, and government agencies concerning television and education. Another facet of her work deals with media literacy and educating children to be critical users of television. Dr. Singer is the mother of 3 sons and grandmother of 5 girls. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Singer.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Why should parents be concerned about young children's exposure to media, both electronic or print?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of sexual material on the media and a lot of violent material that very young children can process. We have experience, and so when we watch a program, we bring that experience to the program. But a young child like the one you described can tell if that's real or not real. And it certainly reminded me of an incident in our own lives. When my youngest child was about 3, we took him to the ballet to see the Nutcracker Suite, and he loved it. But then it was put on TV, and when the close-up came of the mice, especially with their teeth and whiskers, he screamed and ran out of the living room, and I thought, my goodness, what did I do? And that made me realize that what you see on television can be very distorted and frightening to a little one who can't understand what the camera is doing to a character or to an animal.
That exact same thing happened to my 4th son when we put it on television. Because I thought, oh, good, he's going to have an appreciation of the ballet.
Yeah.
And then it went on television, and that's exactly right, the close-up of the mice.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, okay. We must not be alone in this.
No.
What kinds of media habits do you feel are detrimental for kids developmentally?
Well, I think what happens is once you start watching television, and we know from our own research that kids do get habituated to it. For example, in one of the studies that we did on television and its relationship to reading, we started with children when they were 2.5 and followed them over 6 years. And we found that the children who were heavy TV viewers at age 2.5 were still heavy TV viewers at age 6. And on reading tests were doing less well, significantly less well, than children who were not that involved in TV. So I think what I'm saying is it really displaces the time that a child can be engaged in play or having someone read to him or even looking at picture books. And I think that's one of the problems. You just sit there and you watch and you're not interacting with the characters or with the story.
Now, they say when you watch television, adults and children, that different things happen to your brain patterns. Things go into more of a passive mode. There's a chemical change.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we can't do too much of the brain testing with children. And I know of one good study that was carried out by John Murray, who's at Kansas. But that was done with slightly older children, and they were able to go into an MRI, and he showed them video of a violin program. And they was able to test the brain waves because they were hooked up to a machine that looked at that. And he found there was tremendous amount of arousal in the area where emotion is placed in the brain. But what that means, we don't really know. All it told him, there was an arousal. So sometimes you're not sitting there with passive brain waves. You actually can get different parts of the brain can be activated by what you see on TV. But we don't really have a lot of good research on what the television is doing to the brains of very young children. It's just hard to get that.
What's the difference between television and public television in terms of the research and what it does?
Yeah, public television is good if you're looking at thinking the children's programs now. Actually, there have been studies, again, looking at public television and its effects on children. There have been some long-term studies by Aletha Houston and her group. And they found, for example, that children who were exposed to public television were doing much better in school years later. Then they followed these kids right through adolescence into high school, and that finding held all the way through. So what you're getting on public television is more carefully thought out programs, programs that are not only educational but entertaining, otherwise kids aren't going to watch them. But where the camera is really doing some things that I think are very important for a child. For example, I'll take Fred Rogers, which is a wonderful program, and unfortunately he has passed away, but the program is still on. He was very cognizant of the fact that children don't look at it picture on TV and see it the same way we do, so that if he was holding something in his hand, for example, first you'd see a big headshot of Fred, then you'd see his body, then you'd see his arm, and then the camera would pan down so that you'd see his hand. So if he was holding a little pebble in his hand, a child would know that belongs to Fred Rogers, that's in his hand, rather than a quick shot of a pebble in someone's hand, which really can be quite distorted. And in Israel, they've done a number of studies looking at that, how the camera really does affect a child's processing of material. So I think being very careful in the way the camera is used, speaking very slowly, because children process information in a very different way than we do, and Fred Rogers did that very well. And he allows something on a program that I think you find now in Blue's Clues. You find it in Dora the Explorer, where there's time
these are all
for
public
all
television
public television
programs.
Or, well, Blue's Clues is on Nickelodeon. And I think Dora Explorer is on Nickelodeon, too. But these programs are modeled, I think, after some of the good PBS programs, where there's time for reflection, where a child can see something, and then there's quiet. A person can ask you a question, and you have a chance to answer it, which Fred Rogers did very well. And which, by the way, in Blue's Clues has done very well, too.
So it's a matter of knowing what's really worth letting your child
yes.
watch.
Yes, and it's hoping that the producers are aware of the developmental stages in childhood, that children do handle material differently if they're a 3-year-old, a 6-year-old, or a 10-year-old. And if the writer and the producer are aware of that, you generally get a good program. But I'm afraid on commercial TV, we're not always seeing the good kinds of programs for children.
We got a big kick out of my cousin's 3 children as they were growing up. They were only allowed to watch public television, so we'd have a family event, and these 3 children would come in and say, "Did you see Antique Roadshow?" None of the other children had seen Antique Roadshow.
I like that show, by the way. I think public television can really do a better job. It hopefully will continue. I don't know. The funds have been threatened to be cut from a lot of the programming, and that would be too bad.
When young children have been viewing electronic media, what kinds of behaviors follow?
Okay, we have to be careful, and we have to talk about what kind of electronic media. If they're watching television and they're watching action detective shows, which many children do, they do stay up late and see these nighttime dramas, or if they're watching cartoons, then we see some different kinds of behavior. In our own research, we found that children who were exposed to a lot of reality shows and action detective shows and cartoon shows were more aggressive in the daycare centers. Mm. They were actually hitting other children. Now, we're not talking about violence because preschoolers are not violent, but compared to children who were watching PBS, let's say, or more benign programs, their behavior was definitely a much more aggressive kind of behavior. They imitate what they see.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on young children and the media.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Dorothy G. Singer about young children and the media.
It was a classic experiment by Albert Bandura years ago, playing with a Bobo doll, what happened with these children had, do you know what a Bobo doll is? A tall plastic doll that has sand in the bottom. And if you hit it, it falls down and then it pops up.
Okay.
And he did a study where he gave the children some lovely toys and then took them away so they were mildly frustrated. And then they were brought into a room where there was a Bobo doll. Now, what they had seen on a tape was a teacher who was hitting that Bobo doll with a hammer and jumping on it. These children who had seen the tape and then were mildly frustrated when they were brought into that room with a Bobo doll, they're hitting that Bobo doll and climbing on it and hitting it with a hammer. And he taped all of this compared to children who were mildly frustrated but saw a benign program. So what he was attempting to say is that children will imitate aggression, and if there are no consequences shown, and if there's an adult who does this, they are more apt to do it than if there are consequences of the aggressive act, or if an adult really controls them and says, no, you can't do this. So we are concerned, and I would think there isn't anyone who's doing television research today who would dispute the fact that children who are exposed to television violence are more apt to copy that kind of violent behavior, aggressive behavior, than children who are not exposed to that.
Perfect example of how children learn from what they see and not what we tell them necessarily.
Yes, they learn from what they see, which is, you know, interesting to me that one of the major findings in psychology that's been replicated over and over, if you're a father or mother and you physically abuse your child and hit him, that child is going to grow up and hit another child. It's true. We learn that, and we see that in study after study, because the parent is the role model. And if they hit you, then you think, okay, so if someone's mad at me, I hit them. Mommy does it. Daddy does it. I'll do it. So this is something that's been replicated again and again in psychology. If you hit your kid, that kid's much more liable to hit his child when he grows up.
And is there any ameliorating effect of daycare centers or school or anything like that where they're in a different environment where there might be different rules?
Yes, I think that does help. And especially if the daycare teacher will talk to the parents, I think that's the important thing. Otherwise, it's not going to change very much. We do see in the daycare many children who are aggressive, and when you begin to check what's going on in the household, you do notice that there is physical punishment. And that's one of the things that we have found. It's not only the aggressive behavior you see on TV, but there's an interaction effect that we have found. Kids who watch the kind of television I mentioned, the action detective shows, the cartoons that have the aggression, and have a parent who hits them, tended to be the most aggressive in our study. And there was an interaction effect. Now, if you partial out, if you take out the fact that the parents are hitting the child and just look at TV alone, the aggressive programs, it still stands up. The correlations are still very potent. But when you add that parent hitting the child, it's even more strong. So I would say don't hit your child. You have to learn how to really reason with your child, talk to your child, and teach them that there are other ways of settling a fight than hitting.
Do you feel there's an optimal age for a child to be introduced to electronic media?
A couple of years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics came out with an optimal age. They said 2. Don't let your child watch any TV until the age of 2. And that created a big, you know, outcry from parents. Said, wait a minute, I need television. I work all day. I pick my kid up from school. I've got to have my dinner. I really need that TV. And the American Academy of Pediatrics has stuck to that. And I believe that that's really important if you can do it. First of all, you know, a young child needs to play with toys. They need to touch them. They need to taste them. They need to explore the world around them. You can't do that with TV. And I think you have to start exposing them to books, even picture books, and playing with them. And then if they're 2, when they reach 2, yes, I'd say half hour a day isn't going to harm a child, or a good video isn't going to harm a child. But we know from a piece of research that I just did with Deborah Weber, another psychologist, and we just completed that, and it's been published, that we found that going into the homes of about 350 families, middle-class families, and interviewing them, we found that at 6 months, babies were already watching videos, and at 9 months, they were already exposed to television. So that we do know early on, mothers think, okay, this video's fine. I put my child in a little seat, turn on the video, and I go about and do what I want to do. Now, it's okay for 10 minutes if you've got to go in the shower. But what happens is you begin to see, oh, this is really quieting my child. I can do it a little bit more. And so we find that the children are beginning to get, you know, habituated to videos and TV quite early. So I would say, you know, if you can prevent it, don't start before 2. Use that time to play with your child. That's the best thing you can do with a child.
Are you familiar with these videos that are designed for very young, 6-month-old children?
Yes, I have looked at many of them. I've looked at the Einstein videos. They're getting a little better. But I'm thinking of one particularly that I didn't like at all. It was supposed to be visual stimulation, and I watched it very carefully. And what you saw were different pictures of different things coming on one after another. It might be an apple, it might be a monkey, it might be... None of them were related to each other. There was no voiceover, but gorgeous Mozart music in the background, and I love the music. Mm-hmm. But no one was telling the baby, this is a monkey, this is an apple. And by the way, they were violating what I talked about before. They fill the screen, so the apple was large. You had no sense of size proportion. And yet they're touted as the best thing for children. They're advertised in all the parent magazines. Parents buy them. Grandparents buy sets of them for their children. And people think they're great. But if you really watch them very carefully, they're not really what I would call good learning experiences for a child. You'd be better off having a child on your lap and looking at a picture book and pointing at the picture and talking about it and saying, yes, that's an apple. We have one in the kitchen. And this is a ball. Look at your ball on your toy shelf. And let's play ball. You know, this is what I think is more important, the interaction of parent and child.
Now, what happens to the synapses and all the things that happen in the brain when a child has a physical contact with an object as opposed to a visual on-screen contact?
Well, Frank Wilson wrote a wonderful book called The Hand, and he talks about how important it is to use the hand and how when you touch, the kinesthetic touch sends a message to the brain immediately, and you're feeling it, and you're handling it, and you can do it. But when you're looking at it, yes, visually there's a message that comes, but it's not as rich as when you actually can touch and explore something, or even squeeze that ball, or even if you want to smell that ball. You're using more of your senses so that you really are activating the brain very quickly. And again, as I say, maybe at one point we'll be able to really measure what goes on in an infant's brain. Right now we really can't do that very well. But we do know that the actual live experience of playing is tremendously important for a baby. And that's why I think the American Academy of Pediatrics was so strong about not having kids before the age of two really look at TV, but have that more personal experience with another child, with a parent, grandparent, caregiver.
People do say that if you put a child in front of a TV screen or a video screen or something, there's something that the child is not getting. Child could be getting at that point. They're giving up something.
They are. I think they're giving up the interaction with a warm, loving body and can be the caregiver, mother, father, a very good teacher, grandparent, but someone who really will hold that child on their lap and have a relationship with that child that is not cold or impersonal.
Have any surprises turned up in the research on media habits of infants and toddlers?
Well, I think I had mentioned I was really surprised to see how young babies were exposed to videos at 6 months. I really didn't think that was going to happen. And now we did that study. Kaiser Foundation came out with a similar study and found out that very young children are being exposed to TV and videos earlier. You know, part of it is that we do have more women in the workforce than ever before. And if you're a single parent, you really are harassed. You're under tremendous stress. And I know that and appreciate it because the families we're working with now in five different states are single parent families mainly. People who are working very hard, their children are in daycare till 5:30. They pick them up. They worked all day. Now that means going home, getting dinner on the table, preparing, you know, the lunches for tomorrow, doing the laundry, trying to get my shoes off and get my feet up, need some time for myself. And what is there that's going to help you? The TV, it's easy, it's handy. A video is easy, it's handy. And the child is in the house so that you feel, well, he's protected, he's not out on the street, I'm right there. But you're giving your child what I call a secondary kind of behavior reinforcement. You are not really there. Now, the kind of parents we work with, we work very hard to try and say to them, if you can give them just 10 minutes a day of play and play some of the games we've developed, you're going to find that not only are they gaining something, but you are. And we have found over the 5 years we've been doing this study, and I have so many letters and notes, and even from the focus groups, these parents say, I never thought that playing a few minutes a day could make such a difference. But I find my child now never says he's bored. He knows how to play a little game. It's because I showed him how, and now he can do it, and we think of games together. He seems less angry in school. He's doing better. So all of these things are happening, and we find these mothers really do want to play and wish they had more time. So on weekends, we find that they're doing more of the play than they had ever done before. And that is so gratifying to me as a researcher to know that we're having some kind of impact on somebody somewhere.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on young children and the media.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show,
send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Dorothy G. Singer about young children and the media. What kinds of games have you developed?
Well, in this last set, which is called My Magic Story Car, we suggest to the parents they have a simple cardboard box, and you can get that anywhere. And first have your child decorate it, because that box in our games is going to be a spaceship, it's going to be a automobile, it's going to be a boat, it's going to be every different kind of thing. It's going to be an airplane. And then some of the games we developed, for example, this planet game, Going to a Strange Planet. Well, actually what happens, a little character comes down from a planet, we call it Mars, that's the Mars game, and he says, what do you have on Earth? And the children tell them about their pets and their foods, but we have books. And he's never seen a book, so he needs to know what a book is. And then part of the lesson is the children tell him what a book is, that there's a title, there's an author, there are words, and you read from left to right. And then they end up making a book for him, which he takes back to his friends on Mars. Another game is the octopus game. Down under the ocean is an octopus who's guarding a treasure, and the children have to get in their boxes and make believe they're submarines and go find him, because that treasure means they can then get money and build a playground for poor children in the neighborhood. But the octopus says, you want my treasure chest, you have to give me two words that will make one word. For example, if I say cow and boy, what would that be? And the children say cowboy. And it goes on for five or six of those words. And each time they're correct, he takes two tentacles off the box till all of them are off, and then they have the box and go back up in their submarine, and they now have their treasure. So that's the kind of game. A restaurant game where they learn how to go to the restaurant, order their food. They make placemats, and so they decorate them with circles, squares, triangles. And then the waitress comes and takes their order, and she learns how to scribble. And we don't care if they don't write. She just takes the order. And this game is filled with may I please, thank you. Also learning the names of food, learning that you set the table with the utensils. When it's through, that you're going to pay your bill, and you count out the pretend money. So through the sequencing of restaurant, they're learning a lot of concepts, colors, shapes, numbers, manners, and so on. So those are the kinds of games that we've been doing, all imaginative. No expensive props, whatever you have in the house, and Mom can do it with you for a few minutes each day.
We've always joked that our children's favorite toys were the packages that the toys
always
came in.
Always. The box in my house was a puppet show. It was a spaceship. It was a boat. It was an airplane. It's always, the box is the best toy.
And it's wonderful if you get a new refrigerator or stove.
Oh, they're even there.
Box.
Yes, yes.
We used to say that our houses were filled with boxes and forts.
Yes, that's true.
And that was it, blankets and card tables, and that was basically it.
Yeah, card table makes a wonderful tent. We have a game called Camping, and we just simply throw a sheet over the card table, and that's a tent, and you find all these animals that are out in the dark, and you have your flashlight, and you're not afraid to go out, and you end up having a marshmallow roast and invite these fake animals. So we're just using imagination, and we don't want parents to spend money, but just use things around the house.
Now, what do you say to the harassed single mother you were talking about who has the little one who's too little to play about the tent and so forth, and the dinner needs to be made, and the doorbell's ringing, and the laundry's buzzing, and the dryer, and so forth and so on. What kinds of things do you tell them they can do instead of switching on the television?
Yeah, well, if you can, I've always thought that tapes are very nice, music tapes, and you can put one on. They're very soothing. They're very pleasant. It makes a nice substitute. After all, I grew up in the period when there was no TV, and my mother had to cope with me and two other children.
Did okay.
And we listened to radio, and she also had a lot of music on records, and I remember that was really very nice because she could be in the kitchen cooking and she could be singing while we would be singing. So she did that when we were very, very young. And I think when you have a baby, if it's really young, you can buy a sling and you can have the child in the sling while you're doing some fussing around the house. I think it's really important that you just don't plunk them in front of a TV set because you think that's going to keep them quiet. You just don't know what is going on in their little minds, and why should you do that when you could have music for them? So I think the substitute of a audio tape would be something that I would, you know, give them. Or have a good playpen that's filled with toys that they don't see during the day that you keep for special moments. Have a little bag of those surprise inexpensive toys that then you can pull out, and you have 10 minutes while they're exploring these new things they haven't seen. And then tuck those away, save them for another busy time.
My mother used to have a Sunday morning bag because they wanted us to sleep
yes.
later, or at least be quiet later
yes.
so they could sleep a little later. And she said, we never saw those toys except Sunday morning.
Yes. I know that I used to take along that kind of bag to a doctor's waiting room, mm-hmm. you know, and that kept them very busy and very quiet. And then they loved to go to the doctor because they knew the bag was coming. So anything that's new is going to keep them busy.
Isn't that interesting? We used to have a drawer in the kitchen, and
mm-hmm.
that was the drawer for the kids to
yes,
pull out things
yes.
and play with.
Yes.
So there are all kinds of different ways to
yes,
do it.
Yes, you can do
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame that we have to close this because we really could go on talking about the subject for a very long time. But before we close, what resources, Dr. Singer, would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue some of these issues further?
Yes. Well, there are a number of good websites, and there's one called Playing for Keeps. I think they can go to that and see some games and activities. Fisher-Price has a nice website. I also think that in the back of our book called The Handbook of Children in the Media, there's a whole chapter devoted to resources and websites all dealing with parenting. And if you can't find that book, just go to Google and you write in parenting website and you will see so many of them come out. There really are dozens and dozens of them right now. Many more than I had ever dreamed there could be, and all of them giving some decent advice and ideas about what you can do with your child. And the library, the children's librarian, is a great resource. She really does know which parenting magazines are around. And by the way, a magazine called Child is very good. It gives a lot of ideas for parents and how they can play with their children. 0 to 3 is an organization in Washington, D.C., and they do have material that they do give free. But definitely if you go to Google or any of the search engines, Yahoo, Google, you will find, and just put the word parenting websites, it's amazing how much is going to come out for you. The Toy Manufacturers of America, they're based in New York City, and they have a lot of materials, pamphlets on good toys, safe toys, toys for children who are disabled, who have all kinds of difficulties. So those are free pamphlets, and they're very, very good. The other best resource for material is 1-800-USA-LEARN. Call that number. This is a government number, and you can get so much free material. And I have just stacks of it that I've gotten from 1-800-USA-LEARN. And it's just you dial it, and when you hear the person on the other end, they'll ask you what age you're interested in, and then you give them your name, address, and they send you materials. And they always send a form that you can fill out for other materials that you get. So that's a very good resource.
That's terrific. Well, you have given us a lot of wonderful resources, but you yourself have been a terrific resource.
So we
are very grateful that Dr. Dorothy Singer could join us today and talk about young children and the media. Thanks so much.
Well, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a help to us. Mention show number 271. And tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Joseph and Anna Smith Foundation. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.